The following is a non-paid commercial with real people, not actors. Really.
Now, you can make your Christmas morning more rugged and handsome.
With the Festive Foreign Film Fans Flapjack.
It's our logo on your pancakes.
Served with our favorite vitamin-packed, carbo-loading morning drink, beer.
It's the Breakfast of Champions.
They are made with food coloring and vegetable shortening, so we're 100% edible and delicious. Right, Bob?
Right, Bob?
Bob, you're supposed to be eating them.
I can't. Not with both of us staring at me.
Jake, roll the tape.
The Festive Foreign Film Fans Flapjacks. You'll be stuffing your faces with our faces. Available at dollar stores and Dollar General now throughout the Midwest of Illinois, by Chicago, in those few stores you'll find by the town carry. Get them today.
The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them.
Good you! Trying to survive!
Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
For Natale! God is camping! It's Christmas,
it's Christmas. We are the wild and pretty guys!
But they're both festive, aren't they?
Joyeux Noël!
And we are the Festive Foreign Film Fans. Hey, Mark.
Hey.
It's another successful holiday season that's passed, and I trust that you collected a lot of candy.
You know what? Yes, I did.
But here you went and told me that you don't even like the holiday, and yet you were the best Death of a Showgirl Taylor Swift zombie I saw that night. I mean, I love that glammy burlesque outfit covered in blood and that raven feather. That was awesome. And I look, I'm still wearing my friendship bracelet that says, look what you made me do.
Well, what was really weird was that dude dressed as Travis Kelce kept tackling me.
You couldn't keep him away, could you?
I couldn't.
You know what? But people didn't seem to get my bad Energizer bunny costume. I mean, I had the pink ears and the sunglasses with the pava hat and the bolo tie. And I thought the Super Bowl 60 shirt would give it away. That, and I kept saying, Segway. Hey, segue, hey, segue. But no one got it. Oh, so Mark, and maybe it's the movie tonight, but I know we're coming off of our Eat, Drink, and Be Scary Halloween and Christmas crossover event from last month, but I don't want to let it go yet, only because what's weighing on me is this frightening reality that we live in. We're heading into my most favorite season of the year, and maybe it's just all the Halloween candy I ate that is upsetting my stomach, You know, I love and embrace Christmas, and I like all of the trappings. I like the gifts. Mm-hmm. I like the decorations, the lights, the food, the parties, all of it. And I like the shows, the concerts, the markets, the festive activities. It is all so incredibly fun, and we create memories with our families that we still talk about so many of the funny ones that have come up. And now we're doing it for our grandchildren. And I look forward to it all year. But I don't want to believe that it's just the things. I like to think that it's also a time that is more meaningful. Mm-hmm. It's really when we can take stock in our lives, pause, and we say, what can we do to be better people? That's right. Kind of what I really want to believe, that is true. That is, it's the one time of the year that we can look at ourselves honestly and say, how can we be kinder? How can we be more patient and more willing to help others? And I know usually we're joking around, right, and we're having fun. And that's what I love about this. This is a time when I can come and be goofy with you, right, and sit here,
yep,
and joke around. But I don't know what it is lately.
Right.
But I'm just worried because I look around and it just seems like everybody just so angry. It's almost like they want to be upset. They want to be offended. I don't know what it is. And I just find it so very distressing.
I mean, I still remember our very first podcast from France and their tradition in December where they don't argue.
Oh, yeah. Like a moratorium. Don't bring up anything bad.
Yeah, you know? I mean, there's okay to bring serious, but don't go for those hot buttons because everybody has them.
Yeah.
Everybody gets triggered. Like, I know I've triggered people and I've said, oh, sorry. I said something that I didn't know would offend you. To your point, in this day and age, it seems like people are out there looking and trying to find out a way to sort of get underneath someone's skin. And it's not just strangers. It's our families, too.
And I know you hear this all the time, but I really do believe social media plays a big role because you go on and you see these videos of people throwing fits and fighting and just treat people nice. Well, and
yeah, and all those videos, they surface because people are more interested in taking a video than trying to maybe de-escalate a situation. Yeah. Step in between two people. Like, yo, go. Is this really worth it? I remember back in the days when our kids were playing athletics and moms and dads, it wasn't just dad, especially at hockey games, would start screaming and yelling at each other. And I always thought, I was always excited when I had the courage to do it. I saw other people saying, hey guys, hey, reality check here. Yeah. High school game, the referee's 13 years old. And so many times it would be like, oh, you're right. You know, someone was taking the time to care enough to hold someone accountable. And yeah, I just,
they lowered the temperature.
They lowered the temperature, which I just, I don't know. I feel like the flame is always up too, Bob.
Mary Ellen, she doesn't want to have the news on. She doesn't like any of the talk shows because it just upsets her too much. And I always like to say, hey, there have been really difficult times in the country. The Civil War, the 60s, and the Civil Rights Movement, and all the things that we saw. So you can't let it wear you down. You can't give up hope. I know that we are one small little podcast. What I have learned from this podcast is that people across the world, we're mostly the same. We enjoy the same things.
Yep.
We celebrate in very similar ways. Now, there's cultural and ethnic differences, and we love to focus on those, and we enjoy those. But really, we have this shared common humanity. Think about life today compared to the past. Our lifespans are longer.
Yep.
We have the most amazing conveniences. We carry a computer around on us the size of a phone. We have incredible food. We live in beautiful homes. Yeah. We're healthier and do more than our ancestors ever could. And yet, we're so angry.
I know. You know, and because we're a foreign film podcast and we have learned so much, I think the other thing too, I would say, not that I'm a world traveler, you know, last 3 years I have traveled to different countries. Some of this, I think, is more an American phenomenon than I think it's international.
Really?
But I just don't get the sense, talking to some of the people I've met from Greece, from Germany, France, Italy, I think they have passionate debates, but at the end of it, it's not a personal attack and things. So that's just my personal opinion. Others who are listening, love to hear your thoughts on it if you experience the same. But I just feel like it is more of American fam. And maybe it's because I live here and I see it more often. I don't know. I throw that out for people to react to.
Yeah, but you know what? I want to think that that's the case. Yeah. Let's use that as a model. We're a podcast that focuses on foreign countries. And sometimes I think we can be arrogant and condescending when we think about our foreign neighbors. It's kind of fun to look at them and say, hey, there are some positive things we can borrow. And if that's one of them, and especially when you look at the Nordic countries that constantly are at the top of the happiest people living the best lives, I think, and maybe it's because Halloween now is past and we know Christmas is coming. Can we just pledge to maybe just do a little better than we have been doing? And I don't want to be consumed by despair this holiday season. I want to find ways to reach out to those who need it the most, those who I disagree with. And it's not a left-right thing because extremes create problems on either side. And that's where I want to own up and say, hey, it's not one side is better overall.
That's right. You know? I pledge, Bob. I'm with you. And Jake's with you.
Yeah.
And Jackson, Lena, and Nora are with you.
We're going to lead a march.
That's right.
The Festive Foreign Film Fans Parade.
I'm ready.
Well, Mark, thank you for letting me just get that off my chest. Oh, I do feel good. Much better. In fact, now I think I can raise a toast because we have to go back to the land of chocolate and waffles before we move on tonight's movie. You know, we go back to Belgium where they love their beer. And I think you've now inspired me. We're going to stop at a bar there. And when we do, we specifically know what we need to leave behind to keep us from stealing the bar glass. Do you remember what that was?
Yeah, I swear it was a bra. I mean, and I thought, well, how am I going to leave a bra when I don't always have one on?
I call mine a man's ear.
Now, I want to know who could ever be mad at you when you just admitted that you wear a man's ear. So it wasn't a bra?
It was not a bra. Mark, if you knew the answer,
at least you won't be leaving behind a 4F sticker. In fact, we might even give you a pair of stickers.
A pair? Why a pair?
The bars in Belgium require that patrons hand over one of their shoes as a deposit. These are put into a basket and hung from the ceiling. These shoe baskets have become quite a tourist attraction. And we promise not to put you in a basket and hang you from the ceiling, only if you agree to display your winning sticker on your footwear.
Oh, that's so cool. What a smart idea.
So now we're going to visit the angry streets of Bogota, Colombia, and confront its harsh realities at Christmas time. Mm. With its poverty and longstanding social and political struggles in a movie called Un Varón, or
A Male.
A Male.
Want to watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
Mark, this is kind of an interesting film, and I'm probably not going to have a lot to describe in terms of what happens in the film.
Right.
Because there really is just one principal actor, and he is in, I think, every single scene.
I think you're right.
His name is Dylan Felipe Ramirez Spitia. He plays Carlos. Dylan was discovered at a rap concert by director Fabian Hernandez. Now, he worked with Hernandez for 6 years, developing his acting career, and he appeared in two of Fabian's short films. He had lost his parents when he was 8. His dad died from a drug overdose, and his mom was sent to prison for her addiction. Afterwards, Dylan had become a ward of the state. When this role came up, the director said he knew that he needed someone with artistic ability, not a masculine stereotype, but who kind of reflects some gender fluidity and feminine features. Dylan is a breakdancer. He's a graffiti artist. Like we always say, these actors are incredible, multifaceted, and he likes to rap, which unfortunately he doesn't get to do here, which he probably could have. Despite his desire to seem imposing as Carlos, he is the smallest and thinnest of all the other actors. In fact, he's smaller than most of the women in the film. So the movie starts out with interviews. And you don't know if these are people off the street. Yep. They don't make clear at first. They're talking about what it means to be tough and what it means to live on the street, being a man. Carlos lives in a shelter with other street youth. We find out that Carlos's mom is in prison and there's never mention of a father at all. He gets recruited by a gang person to do drug running for him.
Yep.
And I think he's specifically targeted because his mom's in jail and he's living on the street.
He's vulnerable. Yeah, the beginning where they're talking about this code of being a man, a code of being on the street. It was such an odd twist on societal rules. There's rules we follow. Some of them made sense to me. Some of them were like, wow, what a hard thing to live up to.
You can see why he selected Dylan. At first, when I watched the movie, I thought he was transgender. I couldn't tell if he was a woman or a man. Now, he's male, but he was selected, I think, because he's purposefully not what you would imagine someone strong, imposing, and masculine.
Who's trying to be strong and imposing and masculine.
And tough.
Bob, I couldn't agree with you more. Like, I wondered, and I'll wait to you later to see if later in the film when you're going to bring up when he visits a woman, a prostitute, he's reluctant to do anything. And that's when I thought, wait a minute. Maybe he is. She is a woman. I couldn't agree with you more.
And throughout the film, he's trying to prove his toughness and his masculinity. But you know what? He is not alone. He's sensitive. And like you said, there's etiquette and rules. They have a funny scene at the shelter. There's all these really tough people, and they're showing them a Pepe Le Pew cartoon, and they're laughing and they're commenting on it. I'm thinking it almost shows their youth and their innocence as young people, but then they also live on the street. This is all happening at Christmas time. And Carlos goes to see his sister, and his sister, at first they say she's just working, trying to raise money to help her mom. And I think it's to help her mom get out of jail.
Right.
You learn she's working the streets. And so he's selling drugs. She's working the streets. Their aim is just to get their mom out of prison. And all Carlos wants to do is see his mom and his sister at Christmas. It's the only thing he wants to do. And you see how difficult it is. Like in the shelter where he lives, at Christmas time, they film these testimonials about how difficult their lives are and how great it is that they're in this shelter that is taking care of them. And he's like, they just use us as props. That's right. All.
They totally were taken advantage of.
But what you hear throughout the film, this is repeated, is criteria and respect, criteria and respect. Those are all what they're striving for. It's respect on the street, and what you need to do is to gain that respect. But I also love the moments like when they watch the cartoon, or they have the church service followed by the Christmas party, and the church service is presented by, and I always want to say prisoners, but they're not in jail. They're just in a shelter.
It feels
like they are. They're doing the mass, and it's way more poignant. You know their circumstance. And then this dance party, and they're singing a song, an angel song, about how this angel that's protecting them, and they're dancing, and they're smiling, and they're happy. And it's probably the only time in the film you see that element of happiness. It's Christmas Eve. He goes to see his sister, and she is trying to tell him, be careful. She's working the streets, but she's trying to protect him. You know what the streets are like. Be careful. Stay off the streets. Stay in my room. He really wanted to go visit his mom.
Right.
She's like, I have to work. I owe money. So he goes with his friend that he's working for, who is using him to run and sell drugs, but he also seems to be looking out for him too.
They seem to care for him. There appears to be sort of a mentoring relationship with this guy, although again, how he's mentoring him is questionable, but he is including him and sort of vouching for him with the other gang members.
And he is big, imposing. So you almost wonder, what did he see in him? Like, you'd almost think he'd be picking on him. Like, he has several run-ins on the street where people do kind of pick on him because of his size. And that's exactly what you said. He goes out with the gang. They say, hey, it's Christmas Eve. Come out with us.
Right.
And the friend lines up the prostitute. So there's Carlos with the prostitute. And she's very patient with him. And she's saying, is this your first time? And to your point, he doesn't want to do anything with her.
Right.
But he tells her, tell all my friends that we had a great time. And that was sad too.
It was one of the sadder ones, but that's too the moment where I started to think about how does he identify and is it possibly that's a woman? I don't know, but it was one of a few sad moments in the movie.
Then he walks out, he leaves, and the fireworks are going off. Yep. That's Columbia. They're setting off fireworks. And he has nowhere to go. He's looking for his sister. He can't find his sister. And he has a conversation with his mother in jail. He's crying. Yeah. And he says, I'm just tired of everything.
Yeah.
And he's like, if the day comes that you're not there for me, mom, I'd rather not exist. He lives for her, who's his mom, who's in jail.
Yeah, almost like the promise of her. If she's there, maybe life would be different.
And then there's this moment, and maybe you help me understand, the moment where he gets grabbed by the guy and brought in the room, and the guy takes his jacket, takes his jersey. By the way, you know, it's like everybody in this film wears U.S. Either NFL or Major League Baseball jerseys.
I was going to bring it up. Absolutely. I tried to find out maybe more why this. I couldn't find anything, but I don't know if it was a way to identify gangs. Like, hey, we're the Chiefs or we're the Bears or the Vikings or I don't know. But yes, I did notice
it. Was it. Amazing. Everybody yeah. had them
yeah. on. Yes, he does grab them.
And what do you think happens? It looks like he's either going to get beaten up or is he raped?
Right, because he's kind of stripping him.
Yeah.
And you never really find out from a movie perspective. Yeah. It's like, are we getting more insight to that? He certainly was roughed up, physically abused, whether it's sexually or not, yeah. don't know.
He's abused and tossed back out on the street again. Yep.
With no jacket.
Right. And then his friend's telling him, his mentor yep. is telling him, you got to fight. He gets him all ramped up that he goes back to the shelter. Someone makes a comment about his sister yep. and he gets in a fight.
Yep.
And then gets kicked out of the shelter for yep. 2 weeks for misbehaving. And then this is another point that maybe you could help me on. At the end, his friend convinces one of the other gang members for him to do this job. And I believe the job is he's to take someone out. They give him a gun. They tell him where to go.
Yeah.
He goes. A woman comes out. It must be the girlfriend, wife. Or he's not home.
Yep.
Who should I tell him is calling? He doesn't say, and then you see him following somebody
yep.
and he looks like he's about to shoot him. And then he doesn't.
Yeah.
And then he is outside of the place where the guy grabbed him and brought him in. Like he's going to shoot that guy.
Yeah. I think his friend was saying, you need to do something about this guy. You need to stand up to him. You need to take him out. So I actually think the whole time he was going after to kill that guy.
Oh, I thought it was someone else. And then he goes back to the...
Could be wrong, but that's who I thought. I thought he was out to kill that guy who...
Whatever he did to
whatever
him.
Whatever he assaulted him. And he's walked down the street acting tough, but ultimately when it comes time to do something...
He can't do it.
He can't do it. At the core, this is a good person, a good
kid.
It
is. It is.
Yeah.
And you see those moments. As much as he tries so hard to be tough and to be streetwise, he just is not.
But I think the other thing, too, is... There had to be at least five or six scenes where Carlos is observing them tearing down buildings. I got really captivated by that. Tearing down could be meaning you're building new or stuff, but I really took it as the filmmaker was trying to articulate about Bogota and about Colombia, just how run down it is.
Yes.
And it's just like destroying all sort of foundational things in the communities. It was a very impactful movie. Depressing, which I'm getting to how it made me feel, but
yeah. Is it festive?
I know we've been pretty loose on it, but I'm going to have to say no.
I think I'm going to agree with you. I don't think it's festive, but what it is, and this is the flip side of a Christmas movie, it's very emotional. So it may not be festive,
yeah,
but it makes you feel. And all I could think of is, there are real people like this in the world, and he had nothing. It just tears you. Yeah. He's tired of everything. He's tired of the game. He's tired of being on the street. He hates to see what his sister has to go through.
He even remember one part of the thing. He's like, stop doing that. I'll make money. And she sort of like scoffs at him. I'm like, why are you going to make money? But I agree. It was very emotional. Came across a little bit as a docudrama type of movie. I was kind of stressed and kind of sad.
Sad, definitely. And you're right. I didn't think about it. But it does have the feel of a, like he's a real person. And this is a day in the life of him, because they follow him around and they do some interviews.
Yep.
So you get some of that and it feels very real, very gritty. And I think you're right. When he was watching all the construction, I was thinking, oh, maybe things are improving in Bogota. But if you think about it, what you get a sense of is chaos and turmoil. And all they show is the bad parts, and he keeps running into people on the streets doing just nasty things. You know?
Very hard to watch.
So would you watch it again?
I don't think I could.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I could.
Although, having said that, I would say someone should watch it only because I wouldn't watch it as a Christmas movie.
No.
It's very eye-opening.
Yeah.
And I think it's very well made.
I think it's extremely well made. And the only thing I'd say is the movie did inspire me to this movie was made in 2022 or 2020. What is Colombia now? What's it like? I guess the country of Colombia, they have millions of people who flee Venezuela, mm-hmm. I think Ecuador maybe, and try to get into Colombia because it's the more stable of the countries. But that's just full of gangs and guerrilla warfare and multiple coup attempts. And so I never really appreciated what Bogota, Colombia was like, or country Colombia. But this movie inspired me to look at it. So from the filmmaker's perspective, I don't know if that's what they were after, but certainly that's what it made me do.
And I totally agree. I didn't know anything other than kind of the generalizations you know about Colombia. Right. And we will talk about in the customs in Medellin, you know, what we knew about Medellin and where it's at today. But it definitely draws you into what is happening there. What is life like there? And so
I'm curious though, Bob. In Colombia, is there more than one way to greet people for Christmas?
Well, I'm going to tell you, Mark, but the one thing I want to say, anyone out there who thinks that because I watched this movie, that's what brought on the sadness and my feelings of despair, this was not the case. No. They were completely divorced. Although, ironically, it would have been nice if we would have had a very happy, uplifting movie to have that feeling and then to go in to watch this. It really sent me down a rabbit hole. Spanish is the official language of Colombia. And because we know what you would say at Christmas is Feliz Navidad, that's the most common greeting. We've heard this before. So the question then becomes, well, we can say Merry Christmas. We can say Happy Holidays. We can say Enjoy the Day. So what are some other ways that they say Merry Christmas that you can say in Colombia? So you can say Felices Fiestas, which is Happy Holidays.
Perfect.
Or Feliz Noche Buena is Happy Christmas Eve.
There you go. And
why would you say specifically Happy Christmas Eve? And we saw it in this film. It's particularly relevant in Colombia because, as we sometimes talk about in some other countries, which day is more important, Eve or day? And here in Colombia, the Christmas celebrations with the family typically happen on the 24th. They have some more personalized phrases like, Te deseo una feliz Navidad, which means I wish you a Merry Christmas.
Okay.
Or que pasas una feliz Navidad, which is have a happy Christmas.
Oh, so there you go. All kind of ways to be festive.
Yeah. And now I'm starting to feel a little better.
Now we're trending up.
Let's invite Carlos over for Christmas dinner. Mark, they do have Christmas traditions in Colombia. We didn't see too many of them in the movie here other than fireworks.
I don't want to know any of them unless they involve food.
Luckily, we can always find something about food. So awesome. Colombians, literally, they wait the entire year for the holiday season. It is big for them. In fact, they even have a term in Colombia called Recibir December, which translates directly to welcoming December. In Colombia, they have two common Christmas desserts, Natal and Buñuelos. They are served together during December, especially during the novenas, which is another Colombian holiday tradition that we'll talk about. Natilla has a consistency that's like pudding and flan. It's a sweet custard with a rich caramel flavor. It is also flavored with cinnamon and gets its distinctive taste from panela, which is an unrefined whole cane sugar. And some of the natillas will include coconut and fruit. So then with that, you serve buñuelos, and those are like fritters. They're little balls of cheesy deliciousness, and they're a staple during Christmas. You can also eat them throughout the year, and if people do, it's usually at breakfast. They're balls of dough. They're made of cornstarch, cassava flour, and cheese, and they're fried. So they get a crispy crust with just a tinge of sweetness. You drizzle them with honey, and sometimes you can make variations with chocolate or other sweet fillings. So we got our custard and our buñuelos, and Natilla, you usually make it at home. The buñuelos, though, you'd like to buy at the bakery.
Right, cheese, chocolate.
I know, it's heavenly.
Anything else?
I mentioned the novenas.
Yes.
And this is interesting because novenas, they have a very religious purpose to them. Mm-hmm. However, what they've done is they've become a good excuse to host small celebrations in your house where you bring Maybe it's close friends, or another time it might be family, or it might be neighbors. These are a series of nightly parties, and they have no breaks. They go 9 days, novenas, and they end on Christmas Eve. These are probably the most famous Colombian holiday tradition because they've lasted for so many years. The word novena means ninth and is used to describe these gatherings because they happen over the 9 nights before Christmas. They start on December 16th and they finish on December 24th. And what they're supposed to commemorate, the 9 days it took Joseph and Mary to go from Nazareth to Bethlehem. Each novena has a special prayer that is devoted to the Holy Family. This is a Catholic tradition, but as I indicated, it started out where you'd come over, you'd say the novena, everyone would pray, but now it's developed into something much more social than its original purpose. Everyone tries to maintain the appearance of a religious ceremony, but it's usually thought as a way to kind of have a party where guests will come, they eat traditional holiday foods, you sing Christmas songs, and Colombians love their novenas because they get to party with people and they pray and sing and eat and enjoy the time together. And they also will drink.
I feel like 9 beers of novena might be an idea for our friends at Duke's.
So no, not our friends at Duke's. See, Duke's, they have their deal here in the U.S.
Yeah.
I think what we do is we export the idea and we start in Colombia and we say, we're going to introduce the nine beers of novenas.
Okay. I just think, like, could it be a way to recognize another culture here in the U.S.? But I like your idea better because—
although that's not bad.
Of this food you're talking about, I think, we're heading south.
Yeah. Although they do serve alcohol, but it's kind of like more light alcohol, probably because they're going to do it 9 nights in a row. So we'll make sure it's not heavy beer. It's light beer. They also have El Dia de las Velitas. And that is, it's held on December 7th, which, as you know, the next day is my birthday.
Yes.
And this holiday was the inspiration for the candle festival in Disney's Encanto, the day of the little candles in Encanto. Now, I have not seen Encanto. Have you?
Don't talk about Bruno. No, 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 no. We don't talk about Bruno.
I guess you have seen it.
Maybe.
Well, this is widely observed as a national holiday in Colombia. The Immaculate Conception, my birthday, is the day it's believed that Mary was, from the moment of her conception, free of original sin.
That's right.
What is always mistaken, and even as a child, I mistook it. I thought that that was the day that Jesus was conceived, you know, Immaculate Conception. No, no, no. This is all about Mary.
I'm thinking about it. Wouldn't it have been kind of weird?
I know. 3 weeks later?
I mean.
Yeah, I know. I was a child, Mark.
Wasn't last week.
No.
Just checking.
This holiday is celebrated on the eve of the Immaculate Conception, and it's treated as the official start of the Christmas season. Although, as I told you, like they have that saying, most of the stores and the radio stations will say, no, Christmas in Colombia starts in September. But on this night, people put candles and paper lanterns everywhere. They put them on their windowsills, their balconies, their porches, on the sidewalk, streets, park square. They're all over. And you think, you know, when we put luminarias out, it's nice. You should see this.
Because I'll have to look that up.
Do you remember the scene, the day of the little candles in Encanto?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, and that's what it is. And in the rural areas, they actually will light bonfires. And again, they're lit to honor the Virgin Mary and her Immaculate Conception. And then also, and this is kind of funny, on December 28th, they also have what is known as the Dia de los Santos Inocentes. It's a day that's kind of religious, but it's also kind of pagan. It is supposed to honor the biblical child massacre by King Herod. Now, think about that. Now, that sounds terrible. But what the Colombians do, they treat that day like April Fool's Day, where they play tricks and pranks. And the thinking is, the support for why they do this, the jokes are supposed to be a reference to the deceptions that the families had to go through to keep their children from being killed by Herod. So I don't know if they dress them like girls. But there's also pagan theories about this celebration, that the Saturn festivals were a custom between Christmas Day and the Epiphany held in ancient Rome, and they allowed the slaves to play pranks on their masters for a day. And I think we saw this in one of the African countries too. Yeah, when they're playing the game. So pagans would disguise themselves as a mockery of Christians. They dress up as bishops, deacons, and cardinals. They'd enter the churches and sing nine sacred music. They'd eat meat at the altar, and they play dice in the temple. And this mischief was continued like this until the end of the 16th century, when that tradition began to fade and it became this religious holiday for the innocent. The church tried to replace what was happening, the pagan holiday, with the Day of the Holy Innocents, again, to commemorate the souls. But now it's kind of evolved into, it's a union of both concepts.
Right.
We brought in the concept of the innocence of the children who were killed, but also the playful and the chaotic spirit of the Day of the Fool.
That's fascinating, quite honestly, and complex.
It is, and you go, wait, how did a day full of jokes come to commemorate the souls of children who were murdered?
Maybe it's because the things they had to do to keep their children alive.
Exactly, you know? Exactly.
So, wow.
Wow. Well, would you like to hear some Colombian music? You ready to move?
I am. Am I going to do a salsa? Am I going to do a tango? Am I going to do a little rumba? What am I going to do?
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes, this Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that?
The least you could do is play some Christmas music.
Now back to Christmas music.
We're going to do a chuku chuku.
A mí me dicen, Juanes, no te enamores. Y es imposible con todos esos bombones.
A mí me dicen, Ryan, no te enamores. Yo me enamoro si me tomo un par de rones.
Y aquí llegó.
No, what we did there was a chuco chuco, and thank you for letting me lead. So that song was released in 2024. It's a new one, and it's a collaboration between the popular Grammy winner and Colombian musician Juanes and Colombian reggaeton star and rapper Ryan Castro. They came together and they wanted to make a festive and catchy song that is an homage to the singer's heritage. So what they did is they mixed the traditional Antioquian musical style with a more modern urban influence, which is great. The classic song was called Chuku Chuku.
Chuku Chuku.
So this form of music was introduced in the 70s and 80s. It became the unofficial music for Colombian Christmas celebrations, which I should say, when you look up Christmas music for Colombia, what you find is dancing is huge on Christmas Eve. All of the families,
that's awesome.
They're playing music and they're dancing. So Chuco Chuco music has tropical beats, joyful words, vibrant rhythms, playful lyrics, and catchy beats, all aimed to fill those dance floors. So Juanes and Castro, they decided to revive this tradition to reach a new generation, to honor the musical style. And it's also so for the parents, it's more nostalgic and tied to their culture. But then it also encourages young people because it's more has a more urban influence. And again, just encouraging dancing during the holiday.
That's a great song.
Yeah.
I really like it.
Yeah. Lively energy. And I could tell you liked it.
Could it make the list of favorite music? I don't know. Ooh. It's got a great beat.
It's Christmas dinner.
Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it.
Food they put out for Christmas Eve.
Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it.
Most of your major food preparation holidays, Christmas.
Eat it.
What's up, food for Santa?
Eat it. If it's getting cold, reheat it.
There's no chili. No, chili's not a festive food.
Have a banana. Have a whole bunch.
I got to tell you about pierogi.
You're going to tell me even more about pierogi?
I know. Can you believe?
It's amazing, isn't it?
I know. I keep trying to find it. All I want to do is eat it. So we've discussed many different aspects about pierogi. We haven't explored how the Latvians see it as more than a beloved national dish. Many will tell us, and we kind of heard this somewhat from Sabine when she was saying, this is a symbol of Latvian resilience, hospitality, and cultural memory. The Latvians consider pierogi to embody their agrarian heritage and their family-centered social life and the cultural identity across generations. So, like Sabine said, the family gets together, grandma, mom, sisters, all together. So you can trace the origins of the Pragi to the agrarian lifestyle of rural Latvia. Historically, pork and rye bread formed the foundation of the Latvian cuisine. Now, Pragi evolved as a practical and a nourishing food for families and travelers. Now, this is funny because we still haven't seen them yet. But what has changed from when we started, we were told they were pies, bacon pies. Then we heard buns, rolls.
Yep.
Well, they're a hearty snack that are baked at home, and the farmers could carry them into the fields. The choice of bacon and onions, it's a classic filling that reflects the ingredients that most Latvians could produce for themselves.
Right.
They had pork from their small family farms, and they had onions stored for their summer harvest. So pierogi were a culinary expression of self-sufficiency and adaptation to Latvians' normal climate. Now, in Latvia, bringing pierogi to the table around the holidays was a form of bragging rights.
See? Oh, interesting.
Because, you know, you had the farm, you had the pig, these small crescent-shaped pies were considered a sign of abundance. Wow. They represented prosperity as a means to show off that you had a wheat harvest and you had livestock. So it goes back to a time when the households were reliant on preserved pork just to get through the long winters.
Well, that makes sense.
If you were a host serving pierogi, you were showing your guests that you were prospering and you had plenty to share. And so feeding the guests these bacon pies became an effective way to boast about your good fortune.
Wow, who knew?
Who knew? There's so much behind these little bacon-filled pastries. So they also came to signify good fortune for those who have been blessed because of their harvest and their livestock. That's how they started to become associated with and enjoyed at the holidays, because they demonstrated good fortune and sharing. You wanted to share to show your community how you were doing. And it also reflected the generosity of the baker. If you think about it, they were time-consuming to prepare. They required kneading and shaping and filling. Yeah. And baking them in large quantities was really, you had to make a commitment, a time and energy just to do this. So again, demonstrating your skill, demonstrating your kindness. I'm making pierogi for everybody else. I'm welcoming them as guests, and I'm giving them out as a symbol of hospitality. So you can see how this evolved. It starts out as something that the farmer is going to carry out to the field. And then, hey, I can show how well I'm doing. And then because I'm inviting you to show you how well I'm doing, I seem very generous and warm.
Seems a little suspicious, but okay, keep going.
Now what's happened is, and I think Sabine said this as well, the reason why it's powerful, it actually is, despite the time it takes to make them, they're very simple to make. Yeah. Not a lot of ingredients. We, of course, are a little bit cowed by the fact that they have things in here that we have to speck and yeast dough and all that. But for them, it's just a humble comfort food that they feel like reflects their Latvian values. And I think that's where we saw, when I was shopping on Amazon and I got all my pierogi gear and merchandise, now it's a joke. Hey, I'm just here for the pierogi, right? Yeah,
got pierogi. So
there are some that say, hey, just these ingredients, the simple ingredients, show how Latvians have came through and endured challenges, war, displacement, foreign rule. They have kept their core identity in the pierogi. So the families gather. It's a Christmas tradition, make their pierogi, and they pass the recipes down through the generations, strengthening those ties, strengthening that cultural memory. Yeah. And many, many have their own secret recipe that they don't share with anyone, and they pass it on only in their family. This is how pierogi gained the symbolic significance. Mark, we didn't even know this when we started.
Sounded good, right?
We just wanted bacon pie. Oh, the act of baking it is as meaningful as eating them.
I can't believe that to be true, but okay.
And we heard a number of the people have said that the aroma of the freshly baked pierogi elicits feelings of well-being and contentment.
It makes sense to me about the aroma of it.
That smell of bacon and onion is now considered the scent of Latvia. They smell wonderful. They taste wonderful, especially when they're just out of the oven. So they're a cultural emblem, and we are going to have them.
We are. We have a little more ways to go, but yeah, it's fascinating.
All I want to know is that given the cultural significance to the pierogi, yep, in the fact that we are going to make them ourselves, will that make us celebrities there in Latvia? Are they going to invite us to be the marshals of their Christmas parade?
Or alternatively, maybe they'll mock us and want us to come over.
Especially if they taste them.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're going to set a trend as the USA champion of pierogi making.
I think you're right. All right, Mark, on to trivia.
All right, let's go.
It's trivia.
So it's true that Colombia's image has been shaped by the rise of powerful drug cartels.
Yep.
That's what we think when we think of Colombia. And we saw in tonight's movie, it hasn't really faded.
No.
These groups fuel violence, corruption, and they cast a dark shadow over the country's reputation.
Yeah.
So for decades, Colombia has been linked to cocaine trade, as we've seen in numerous movies and TV shows. And while this is true, we're trying to be end on up note.
Yep.
We're trying to raise Bob's feelings, make Bob feel happy. Colombia has gone through a remarkable transformation in the last three decades. Medellin, it's reinvented itself.
Yep.
I think it's important that we recognize that it has a rich culture, it has natural beauty, and it has excellent trivia that has nothing to do with drugs.
Thank God.
However, if you've had one of our stickers, you might find yourself thinking about it a lot. They are so nice. You may want another, and then maybe just one more. You think you can enjoy one at a time. However, if you collect too many, it can be overpowering. We might be able to hook you up with one, but only if you know. This is
really creepy, Bob.
Only if you know our festive fun fact. So, we thought to ask you about the Musica Society of the Bogota Valley that was so prosperous that they would create large, intricate gold objects and then throw them into a lake as an offering to the gods. Mm. I wonder if anyone's ever gone back and dug those out.
I don't know.
We also considered quizzing you on the Cogis, an indigenous group in Colombia that chooses their tribal priests at birth and raises them in isolated dark caves for the first 9 years of their lives.
What?
How about, did you know that Colombia is the world's largest exporter of?
Coffee.
Flowers.
Oh.
And 80% of the roses sold in the U.S. come from Colombia. There is also the fact that the town of Lopez de Meque in Colombia is the wettest place in the world, with an average of 315 rainy days a year. Wow. And an average of 630 inches of rain annually.
That's pretty fascinating, actually.
I think so, too, because for some reason, I wouldn't think of Colombia as a rainy place. And then finally, we're going to challenge you. This one I would love. There are children in Colombia who need to zip line for a quarter mile over the Rio Negro just to get to their school every day. But not this time.
No.
This is bigger.
Uh-oh.
You need to sacrifice for this because I'm giving you a whole sticker. Just one more to satisfy that urge, that need, that craving to fill that gap on your water bottle. You need it, don't you? Answer, and it's yours. All right. A Colombian mayor found a way to reduce traffic fatalities by more than 50%. He fired the corrupt traffic police of the city. And who did he replace them with? He hired 420 what?
Mm.
If you know, we can get you a sticker to hold you over until next episode. We know this trivia game is messy and it can be habit forming. You really need to be careful when you're playing with the devil's stinky temptation.
Wow.
So send your answers to festivefans@gmail.com and we'll let you know next episode whether it pays off. And Mark, here's our quote. Even amid war, destruction, and despair, Christmas Eve is a time when hope and kindness flourish.
Love it.
got that tattooed on my butt. And we want to take another unique turn for our Thanksgiving episode like we've done for the last few seasons. This time we're going to be going far, but staying home. I hope that makes sense. We head out to our old stomping ground in the last frontier, Alaska, USA. Mark and I both worked there in our past, and we will be in our parkas and mukluks, swapping rugged stories about our adventures with grizzlies, caribou, and the breathtaking scenery. Now, we're going to review the film Fat Man, where Mel Gibson plays a modern Kris Kringle living and operating his gift-making operation on a remote farm in fictional North Peak, Alaska. This one you can find on Amazon Prime and Apple TV, plus Tubi, Roku, and YouTube. Mark.
Yes.
With Thanksgiving coming.
Yes.
The festive fans want to wish you all a special day of Thanksgiving. For expandable waistbands, for backyard football injuries, and for beer. And of course, don't forget to bow your grateful heads and recite those hushed and sacred words before the meal. Save the neck for me, Clark. And amen to that.
Amen to that, Bob.
Happy Thanksgiving, Mark.
Happy Thanksgiving. Hey, and remember, right? Just for you, Bob, and for anyone else, don't worry about what you may have said or done in the past. Two thoughts I'd give you. One, you're better than the worst thing you've ever done. And two, just do the next right thing. So even if you did the wrong thing tomorrow, today, do the next right thing when you get a chance. Live your life that way, and I think some of the day-to-day stresses will get reduced.
We're constantly getting better.
We are.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I love it.
All right. Oh, I got to go get ready for my stuffing.
I'm not going to ask about that.
Actually, we're done.
Done, done.
It's over. Over, over. It's over.
It's over. Kaput. Finito.
It's over. It's over. It's over.
This has been a Waysound Studio production.
And sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.